Be seated. We'll start our afternoon session with some admissions to the bar of this court. Ms. Patel, will you come forward?
No. Ms. Patel.
Sorry.
You sit in the right. I invite Judge O'Malley to make an appropriate motion if you wish.
These are not done in order of priority, so don't worry.
Oh.
I move the admission of Priyata Patel, who's a member of the bar and is in good standing with the highest court of New York. I have knowledge of her credentials and am satisfied that she possesses the necessary qualifications. In fact, I have intimate knowledge of her credentials because she not only is a current law clerk, but previously was a judicial intern for me. And she comported herself so well that I offered her an opportunity to come back. And before coming back, she also had interned for Judge Clark in the Eastern District of Texas, making sure that she's covering the whole landscape, and she worked at Weil Gotshal. So I got very lucky to have someone with this kind of experience. She's a GW grad, and I have to thank Dean Whalen for referring her to me. Priya has been a wonderful addition to Chambers. She's worked really hard on some very important cases, and I even got to participate in her wedding ceremony. So I commend Priyata Patel to you. She's still weighing her options as to where she's going to go, so we're not going to commit her to anything right now. But I certainly support her desire to join this bar.
Thank you, Judge O'Malley. The panel will vote on the motion. Do you have a vote?
I do. I vote aye.
And I vote aye. Will you, for the moment, step back while I invite Mr. Dunn to come forward? Then I again invite Judge O'Malley to make whatever motion she wishes.
I have to go back to the same script language. I move the admission of Eric Dunn, who's a member of the bar and is in good standing with the highest court of California. I have knowledge of his credentials and am satisfied that he possesses the necessary qualifications. Again, I am uniquely aware of his qualifications because he is a current law clerk for me. Before he was a law clerk for me, he was a law clerk to Rod Gilstrap in the Eastern District of Texas. Again, we are covering the landscape to make sure we figure out what goes on in all these district courts. And between his position with Judge Gilstrap and with me, he was a legal fellow at the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia. And when he actually leaves here, he is going to the Department of Justice, their antitrust division, where he is going to be a special advisor to the head of the antitrust division on the intersection of IP and antitrust. So it is a perfect setting for him. He's a graduate of the Stanford Law School, just, you know, a minor law school out there in California. He has been a fabulous addition to Chambers. Like all of these clerks, they're not only very talented, but they're just so fun to have around. So I certainly commend him to the bar.
Well, and I invite the panel to vote. Judge Wallach, what say you?
Couldn't get into Berkeley? I'll give him an eye.
and I, too. Good. Will you return to your seat temporarily while I invite Ms. McKenna to come forward? And again, invite Judge O'Malley to make whatever motion she wishes.
I move the admission of Christina De Benedetto McKenna, who's a member of the bar and is in good standing of the highest court of New York. I have knowledge of her credentials, and I'm satisfied that she possesses the necessary qualifications. Again, Chrissy has been with me more than once. She, too, was a judicial intern. In fact, she and Priya were there at the same time, and I couldn't decide who I liked the best, so I asked them both to come back. It was quite a summer for us. Chrissy is also a graduate of the George Washington University. Again, I have to thank Judge Dean Whelan for referring her to me. She did a number of things while in law school, but we can't go into all of them now. But after law school and after interning for me. We made sure we covered everything, so she clerked for Judge Stark in the District of Delaware. So she had a wonderful experience with him, and I certainly am benefiting from all that he has taught her. When she leaves here, she's going back to Boston, and she's going to work at Orrick in their Boston, work with Orrick in their Boston office. And one of the reasons she's going back to Boston is that she and her husband, Tim, her new husband, Tim, relatively new, who is here with us today, have decided that they want to make their home in Boston, where they have other family members as well. So Chrissy, too, has been an amazing, this is a, look at this threesome here, and along with my permanent law clerk, Lana, it's been an amazing year. So I, too, recommend that Chrissy be admitted to the bar. And I would like to personally thank all of them for being so wonderful during a very trying year for me. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. We will again vote on the motion. What say you, Judge
Aye.
Pollack? Say aye. Aye for me as well. So now will the three of you approach the bailiff who will administer the oath?
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will comport yourself as an attorney and counselor of this court, uprightly and according to law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States of America?
I do.
Welcome to the Bar of the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit.
Thank you. Welcome to the Bar of this court for the three of you. We look forward to seeing you at argument time in the not distant future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank all three of you. Thank you, Judge O'Malley. We'll proceed with the case scheduled for argument this afternoon. Number 18-2038, Bowden against the United States, Ms. Dawson.
Good afternoon, Judge Newman, and may it please the court. My name is Alana Nightingale Dawson, and I'm here today on behalf of Lieutenant Colonel Jason Engel. In 1996, Lieutenant Colonel Engel volunteered to serve this country in the United States Air Force. He did so for over 15 years before he was involuntarily discharged in November of 2011. During that time, he served his country honorably by following the rules set forth by the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of the Air Force. When the time came for his service to be reviewed and a determination to be made about whether he should be selectively continued in the service to retirement, he expected that the Secretary of the Air Force would likewise follow the regulations set forth by the Secretary of Defense. But the Secretary of the Air Force did not. That decision and the decision of the Court of Federal Claims affirming the decision to discharge Mr. Engel should be reversed.
Why isn't this one of those types of issues that just relates to military staffing and therefore would generally be non-justiciable?
In this circumstance, and as this court has said numerous times, while there is certainly a realm in which this court does not get involved, like military staffing, as Your Honor noted, when the Secretary of Defense or the Secretary of the Air Force puts forth regulations that bind or limit their discretion, then that this court does review whether or not actions occur outside of that discretion or in violation of that regulation, just as this court reviews whether or not actions are taken contrary to law. Congress specifically contemplated that decisions of selection boards, such as the selection board here, that make a decision about continuation, would be reviewed under the same procedures and the same standard as set forth in the APA, and that's in Section 1558. It's reviewed to determine whether it's arbitrary or capricious, whether it's supported by substantial evidence, or whether it's contrary to law. This court did so in its decision in Berkeley. So Berkeley was a case where this court reviewed whether or not a memorandum of instruction, similar to the memorandum of instruction here, that specified how officers should be dealt with by a selection board, was contrary to law. In that case, the question was whether or not the instructions given to the board were contrary to the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. In this case, the question is whether or not the actions, the memorandum of instruction given by the Secretary of the Air Force was contrary to the regulation that was issued by the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, let me interrupt you for a minute. You identified Lieutenant Colonel Engel?
Yes, Your Honor.
My understanding of this was that this case dealt with 04 majors who were passed over for promotion two times to lieutenant colonel.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Was he promoted?
He was promoted after he was involuntarily discharged. So he was involuntarily discharged from the service in November 2011. And then he was in the reserves and he was called back up. And he was actually called back up involuntarily and deployed to Kyrgyzstan less than 6 months after his involuntary discharge in this case, and while serving on active duty in the reserves, was promoted to lieutenant colonel. And, Your Honor, that demonstrates that this is not a situation where the Air Force had any concerns about whether or not Lieutenant Colonel Ingle should continue to serve his country, whether he should remain in the service. This was, it appears, a decision of expediency. And while we certainly respect the military's ability to make decisions, as Your Honor recognized, about personnel matters, the right to do that is circumscribed by the regulations set forth by the Secretary of Defense. It's important to note that Congress makes certain choices about how the military can operate. And in so doing, it also delegates decision-making authority with respect to regulations to certain branches. And that's critical here. In some circumstances, the Congress chooses to give regulatory authority to the specific secretaries of the various military branches. So in Section 1558E, for example, Congress said that the secretaries of the military branches could issue regulations. In Section 637, which is the section at issue in this case, Congress did not give regulatory authority to the secretaries of the military branches. Instead, they gave regulatory authority to the Secretary of Defense.
So the regulation at issue does say that the individuals should normally be selected for continuation, and then it goes to refer to the six-year period. So would it be a reasonable interpretation of the regulation to say that the normally could modify the 6 years? In other words, that the secretary would have the right to make it 5 years or 4 years or 3 years if they chose to do so?
Your Honor, there's an important clause that comes after the statement about 6 years, and it says the shall normally in 6 years, and then it specifically notes the unless as to an individual officer, unless there are unusual circumstances such as derogatory information in that officer's file. And in our view, this court's question touched on exactly the concern that exists and the problem with the decision here. The question being, and I'm going to read from this court's order, whether the Secretary of the Air Force properly concluded that unusual circumstances justified narrowing the continuation eligibility from 6 years before retirement to 5 years pursuant to the applicable regulation. And so in our view, as a threshold matter, we don't believe that the Secretary of the Air Force had any authority to change the regulation, and perhaps this is the threshold answer to your question, Your Honor. We don't believe the Secretary of the Air Force had the authority at all to change the window because the regulatory authority was granted by Congress to the Secretary of Defense. And as you can actually see in the 2012 version, which we're happy to submit to the court, if the court would like to review, in the 2012 version, and then continuing on to the 2017 version of the same regulation, the Secretary of Defense actually had a different view on the proper window, and the Secretary of Defense changed it to 4 years. That's a decision that Congress reserved to the Secretary of Defense and did not grant to the Secretary of the Air Force. In addition, the narrow unusual circumstances, it's important to note, is circumscribed, and it's circumscribed by the such as derogatory information clause. This court has said, both in Airflow Tech versus United States, which is at 524 F3rd 1287, and in Nielsen versus Shinseki at 607 F3rd 802, that the principle of adjustum generis, which is the notion that a term is defined by the specific term or terms that follow, does apply even when a single term follows the term being defined. The quote from Airflow was, "We see no reason why the principle of adjustum generis cannot apply in this context, where a general term follows one expressly set forth specific term." And in both of those cases, this court was interpreting provisions where a general term was defined by one specific term and found that the specific term narrowed the meaning of the general term.
Did those cases have the such as language?
I don't believe they had the such as language, although I can come back on rebuttal and confirm, but they were situations where there was a general term and they had a specific term that followed. I don't remember if it was the such as clause or some other modifier, but it was language that this court found was an example of what qualified as the term.
Well, the government argues that by use of the such as language, it means it's completely open-ended as to what could constitute unusual circumstances. Do you disagree with that?
Absolutely, Your Honor, especially because the provision at issue in the 1996 version of the same regulation had the unusual circumstances clause and did not have the such as clause. And so if it really is the case that the such as clause is meaningless, A, that would contravene the notion, that would suggest that the Secretary of Defense is putting superfluous language into a regulation that the officers of all of the military branches are looking to and relying on their supervisors to follow for no reason, because it has no meaning, and we simply don't accept that.
So it's your position that by adding the such as language that the Secretary of Defense was intentionally narrowing the categories of unusual circumstances for this particular regulation?
Or at a minimum, clarifying what was meant all along. We don't necessarily believe that unusual circumstances wasn't intended to focus on this narrow, but at a minimum, it was clarified. And perhaps it's the case that it was narrowed, but whatever was the reason behind adding that language, we certainly don't believe that there was no reason, or there would have been no reason to change it from the 1996 version to the version that went into effect in 2007.
I want you to discuss something entirely different, because I feel a little blindsided on this. It disturbs me that your client was promoted. I mean, it's nice, but because the whole thrust of the reg overall is that the person is no longer promotable, and we're going to keep them in because they've served for this long, and we want to give them an opportunity to retire at major's pay. But it seems to me that the standards for promotion are exactly the same for the reserve as they are for active duty. And I don't see how somebody is promotable after they're passed over. I it just blindsides me. I don't know. I didn't go back and research it. It's been a long time since I was an active duty officer, and I just don't know.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would say as a threshold matter, it would certainly yield to the government to explain why, in the first instance, Lieutenant Colonel Ingle was passed over by the initial promotion board and was then promoted. What we will note is, and the reason this was not briefed in the briefing was both because, at least in the briefing that we put forth, was both because this court's order was very specific to briefing the unusual circumstances. We are certainly happy to submit supplemental briefing on that and any other issue the court would like us to address. We would also note that in terms of the challenge that was brought before the Air Force Board for Correction of Military Records, and that was brought up through the Court of Federal Claims, it wasn't a challenge to the promotion decision. It was a challenge to the non-continuation. So that's the reason.
Everybody else was a major and stayed a major.
I don't know the specifics of the other. Okay. I mean, I think the government would have to speak to that. We tried. I know Lieutenant Colonel Ingle. We know about the limited amounts about the other plaintiffs. I'm speaking for myself and the attorneys, don't represent them. And I know we tried to get information about the other 156 officers who were involuntarily discharged. I know Lieutenant Colonel Ingle tried via FOIA requests and was not able to get information because of personnel limitations.
Right. So are you technically representing only one person?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. Now, we don't take a position on whether or not the other officers would be entitled to relief. My understanding is there may be a mechanism in the Court of Federal Claims for them to come back to the court, but we do not represent them, and so do not take a position on that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's hear from the government.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Hi, Mr. Grimaldi.
Good afternoon, Mr. Grimaldi. What's the status? How's that work?
For Lieutenant Colonel Angle, actually, I am surprised at that today myself. I was aware by looking at the various complaints this morning that I hope I don't mispronounce his name, Kirkkenlian, which was one of the other plaintiffs below, was a lieutenant colonel in the reserves, but was unaware of Mr. Angle's promotion in the reserves. This is a matter that I would have to actually ask agency counsel as to what happened exactly with Mr. Angles, because as Your Honors are aware, The record that we used below was a representative record, and it was Mr. Bowd's record, not Mr. Engel. So I don't have his military files per se. I can only speculate at this point that when he was put up for promotion as a reserve officer, that he was the best qualified reserve officer to make lieutenant colonel at that time. It's a different pool, a different time period, but that's all speculation.
Yeah, but that is a possible explanation. You're correct. Yes. I hadn't thought along those lines.
Let me ask you a hypothetical question.
Yes.
If we were to conclude that in this regulation, it's clear that the unusual circumstances had to relate to something disqualifying in mm-hmm. someone's background.
Correct.
Then wouldn't his later promotion be completely inconsistent with a finding of unusual circumstances here?
We are unaware of any derogatory information or any decision regarding Mr. Engel's that was personal in nature. That's not what the record shows here. Your Honor.
Right, so you would concede that you have to win on the conclusion that unusual circumstances is broader than that.
We have another argument, two other arguments, if you will, Your Honor, before we even get to that. And that would be justiciability. And the second, that
Isn't your justiciability argument much, much more difficult today than it was before the Supreme Court decided its Department of Commerce versus New York case? I mean, their Chief Justice Roberts made it very, very clear that virtually everything is justiciable.
Well, Your Honor, we're talking about the Secretary's management of the military forces here, and that is already, you look at Orloff v. Willsbury, and those cases that go back to the Supreme Court that talk about the discretion that the service branch secretaries have in managing their own.
But the regulatory authority that was granted here was granted to DOD.
That is correct.
Not to the secretary, mm-hmm. correct?
Correct.
And so your position is the secretary, under the auspices of managing its forces, has the right to rewrite Department of Defense regulations.
Well, there was no rewriting here, Your Honor. We would disagree
with
that.
Changing 6 years to 5 years?
That is correct.
Rewriting?
It says normally 6 years, Your Honor. That's what Mr. Engel is ignoring here. I mean, we do have multiple levels of argument. First here, that those two sentences, the one addressing unusual circumstances, applies to when the Air Force or another branch is non-continuing a single officer. And then the following sentence, which I may read to you, Your Honors, when the secretary of the military department concerned intends to not to continue larger pools of officers in the grade of 04, which is majors, Your Honors.
Yes, it's that larger pool. Is that what you're primarily relying upon, the general downsizing?
Yes, Your Honor, that there was 245 majors who were put up in that year, that particular year of majors. I would call them a cohort of majors, the same class.
Right, so that why doesn't that simply mean if all of a sudden the secretary, the particular secretary, is finding a lot of people to have bad things in their background that don't qualify them, that the Department of Defense needs to know that?
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the first sentence of paragraph 6.3, and you look at not only that, but also the House report that we mentioned regarding DOPA, this is the law we're talking about here, the Defense Officer Personnel Management Act, the purpose of these selective continuation boards is twofold, and that is first for actually management of the Air Force, the service branch itself, and second, is to retain individuals when necessary, such as in this case, how there were instructions to retain Catholic chaplains and bomber pilots, for instance. What we have here is a force management tool. And if you look at paragraph 6.3, and this is supplemental appendix page 120, the first sentence is talking about the needs of the respective military branches. That is why we have these selective continuation boards.
Aren't there completely different regulations that relate to how to separately reduce force?
There are, under 10 U.S.C. 638, the secretaries of the various branches can early retire or remove individuals regardless of whether they've been twice passed over. So
why didn't the secretary use that vehicle instead of attempt to use this vehicle?
There was no need for the secretary to pick 638 over 637 in this instance because these 245 majors had terminal careers. under 632A of 10 U.S.C., when they were non-selected a second time, their career was terminal. And it was the discretion of the secretary to retain them by using a selective continuation board.
And you think it's the discretion of the secretary to change the six-year time frame to arbitrarily change it from 6 to 5. He didn't say, for this person, change it from 6 to 5. He just said, across the board, we're just going to rewrite this regulation.
Well, I would disagree that's arbitrary. It applies to everybody, Your Honor. It was a rule that was applied to everybody in that cohort for that year that were put forth. Instead of being 6 years from retirement, they were 5 years from retirement. It was a way for the secretary to draw a bright line and put those 245 majors before a selective continuation board to see if they should be continued. Why was that done? If we look at supplemental appendix page 109, the Air Force explained to the corrections board the reason for that was because of the need for force management as well as maintaining a proper balance of the various ranks in the Air Force.
So you're saying the unusual circumstances language is irrelevant to your argument?
Well,
that last sentence means you can do whatever you want under this rank as long
as
you tell us.
That is our primary argument. We do have a response if this court disagrees and reads those two sentences as one action undertaken by the secretary, as opposed to, we think, the plain meaning rule, which if the secretary is going to isolate a particular airman for non-continuation, there should be something individualized about their person's record that's unusual circumstances.
Officer.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor, because we're only talking about majors here. And if we're talking about a larger pool of majors, then at that point, the only thing that needs to be done is that notification clause to the Department of Defense, which there's no dispute occurred here.
It's fair to say that there's a distinction between generalized force management and individual misconduct.
Correct.
And they're not related. I mean, they're really not related at all.
Right.
In the sense that there are lots of people serving honorably who didn't make that grade.
That is correct. And it is just the nature of what happened with DOTMA, the Defense Officer Personnel Management Act. And if we look at the House report that, Your Honors, that we cited to in our briefing, and I apologize.
Let me ask you this.
Yes, please.
Is it still the policy of the armed forces in general that an officer is evaluated by their commander on a periodic basis?
From my experience doing military pay cases, I've seen those evaluations, Your Honor, so I would speculate that, yes, that is.
And those OER, the officer evaluation
Correct.
Reports,
mm-hmm.
rank that individual against everybody else in their grouping. That's correct still, is it not?
Yes, it's competitive. Promotions are competitive, yeah. Your Honor, yes, right.
So you're saying that the six-year statement in mm-hmm. the regulation just becomes irrelevant if he wants to get rid of a lot of people at the same time?
Well, there was a notification provision.
I mean, you could have said 1 year, right, under your theory?
No, because the statutorily required under 632, Your Honor, to retain individuals who are 2 years. And the Congress has made that determination.
Right, so he said could have said 2 years
yeah.
despite this regulation.
3 years, 4 years, whatever the number. Yes, the Secretary has that discretion to manage
Not
his forces.
Not the Secretary of Defense.
The Air
You're
Force.
Saying the Secretary of the Air Force
Correct.
Can completely rewrite DOD's regulation.
It's not a rewriting, Your Honor. If you look at what on page 620 of the supplemental appendix, it says, first off, when we're talking about 6 years, and this is the, we give you the right number here, Your Honors. This is the second sentence of paragraph 6.3 on supplemental appendix page 120. So the first sentence is, it's a big one, Your Honors, and that's talking about the ability of the secretary to convene a continuation board for the needs of the particular service. The second sentence is the 6 years language that you're talking about, Your Honor. And it says, a commissioned officer on active duty list in the grade of 04 who is subject to discharge according to Section 32, I'll skip the reference there, shall normally be selected for continuation if the officer will qualify for retirement according to those references within 6 years. So we're talking about normally retained here. The Secretary of Defense does not mandate the retention of officers within 6 years.
Right. In where there are unusual circumstances.
Where there are two things, two possibilities, Your Honor. The first being the unusual circumstances you mentioned, and that's the next sentence, which mentions that the secretary concerned may, in unusual circumstances, such as when an officer's official personnel record contains derogatory information, discharge an officer involuntarily in accordance with Section 632. Then in the following sentence, the sentence, the only sentence that mattered in this matter, Your Honor, because there was a larger pool, it discusses what happens when you have a group of majors,
but
245, for instance.
But the larger pool still refers to 6 years. And the instructions that were given to the board
absolutely
said, don't do it if they're with, unless they're within 5 years. So I don't understand how you can somehow take that sentence and remove the 6 years from it.
Well, I'm not removing from there because it says shall normally. What the secretary did here was take a sweeping action to pull a larger pool. What Mr. Engel is concerned with and what Your Honor's questions are going towards is the manner in which the secretary selected that larger pool. He selected that larger pool by narrowing the 6-year window to 5 years.
Even though the sentence that talks about selecting the larger pool still refers to 6 years.
Yes. Yes,
right.
You would qualify retirement.
Are you relying on our deference here?
No, Your Honor. This is an action by the secretary. We're relying upon the secretary's inherent authority to manage his own force.
But you're expecting us, though, to accept your interpretation of this regulation.
Correct.
And this how do you get there without deference?
We're only the plain meaning, Your Honor. There has been no official.
You think there's no ambiguity in this regulation?
We think the plain meaning of it is clear that there's two different ways that this can be, that the secretary can non-continue officers in this scenario, Your Honor. Regardless of whether Your Honors agree with us or not, I can be happy to talk about in the time I have remaining the actual assertion of the unusual circumstances in this case. So even if Your Honor disagrees with me and believes that unusual circumstances are required here.
But were unusual circumstances asserted, or you're talking only about this particular impellant or about the group before federal claims?
The group, Your Honor, and that was on supplemental appendix page 109 is the Air Force's explanation to the correction board.
I thought you just conceded earlier that there were no unusual circumstances here.
None pertaining specifically, to be very clear, Your Honor, nothing about Mr. Engel in particular. What the record shows is that the Air Force, to the correction board, explained that the unusual circumstances in fiscal year 2011 was an excess of airmen, which the record does establish, as well as the need to balance the force with having the appropriate amount of ranks, officers in different ranks.
Those would be unusual, but the downsizing is in the statute, is it not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, the downsizing?
When you're saying unusual circumstances included the need to reduce the size of the force?
Yes, because there was an excess over the end strength, the congressionally mandated end strength in 10 U.S.C. 691 for fiscal year 11 had some 332,000 or so airmen that were permitted to serve. And at that time, there was some number of 333,070, I think, in excess of either. It's in the record, Your Honors. I believe
so
it's 1,170.
To prevail on this argument, you would have to convince us that unusual circumstances were not specific to the individual officer.
Yes, we don't believe that. If you do read these two sentences, there's only one action that the secretary can take, the need to find unusual circumstances before removing any Air Force major, whether that be a single Air Force or a group, then the unusual circumstances is not limited to something personal. The fact that an example is provided is just simply an example, Your Honor. And the reason why we believe that
is... What do you make of the fact that it actually was a change to the regulation to add that example?
Well, if you look at what the purpose of DOTMA is, Your Honor, and this is the House report that I was going to mention before, page 27 of it, and it's the House report that we do cite in our briefing. It's right before the actual enactment. It says that, quote, the committee believes it is important to understand that these various selective continuation authorities are intended to be used sparingly and are primarily a means of reducing the numbers in senior grades when necessary, such as during a reduction in force. So Congress envisioned the use of 632 and 637 as another method of reducing the force when there is the need for what we would call a RAF reduction in force. So this is a force management tool, Your Honor.
It
is
not. In a way, it goes hand in glove with the Posse Comitatus Act in the sense that both of them relate to Congress's ability to use the purse to control the armed forces.
And that's correct. And that is even seen within, and this is supplemental page appendix 119, and under the policy of this Department of Defense instruction we've been talking about a lot today, Your Honor, paragraph 4, it mentions that the policy here is to retain competent and effective commissioned officers through the selective continuation process as a cost-effective means of satisfying skills. So you're right, Your Honor. We do agree with that, that there is this cost element to this that runs through from Congress. If the court has no further questions.
Anything else for Mr. Pernod? Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pernod.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points in rebuttal. First, it's important to note that there were, in fact, two changes made by the Secretary of the Air Force to Section Department of Defense Instruction 1320.08. One was what we view the arbitrary change from 6 years to 5 years. The second was, in fact, that change was really, as we note in our brief, more 4 years and 7 months, because in this particular circumstance, the Air Force, Secretary of the Air Force, changed the date of calculation from the date of continuation to the date of convening of the board. And in fact, either of those errors here resulted in Lieutenant Colonel Engel being involuntarily discharged, because at the time the board was convened, he was at 14 years, 6 months, and a number of days. And at the time he was discharged, he was at 15 years and a handful of months. And so even by the time he was discharged, had the Secretary of the Air Force not also changed the calculation date for those numbers of years, he would have been within the 5 years that the Secretary of the Air Force put forward. Second, the government continually relies on the legislative history and DOPMA, but ignores what was cited at page 12 of Lieutenant Colonel Engel's informal brief. Reading from the House report, the committee specifically said that it was the committee's strong desire that these officers, officers like Lieutenant Engel, be continued to 20 years of service as a matter of course, and that only in unusual circumstances would this authority not be fully utilized. In this case, Your Honor, there are two things to look at. Normally, the officers shall be continued in if they are within 6 years. Lieutenant Colonel Engel was in 6 years. The opposite of normal is unusual. And the unusual circumstances here were defined by the Secretary of Defense. Congress granted the Secretary of the Defense the authority to issue that regulation and change it, and it was thus up to the Secretary of Defense to make any changes that were necessary, not the secretaries of the individual military branches.
What do you make of the last sentence?
Your Honor, exactly as your question to the government suggested, our view is that it is a notification provision. It is entirely reasonable to expect that the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness would want to know if suddenly a material or number or critical mass of officers in a particular military branch were not going to be continued, and would might want to review that to see if there's an agreement with the circumstances being identified, might want to review that to determine whether it affects budgets or how the overall military is going to be operated, because it is the Undersecretary of Defense's responsibility to ensure that these policies and procedures
Let me ask you a question, which I'm sure is outside the record, but did Lieutenant Colonel Engel then transfer to the reserve immediately, or was he involuntarily recalled and placed in the reserve?
My understanding is it's the latter, and I'd be happy to confirm with supplemental briefing, but my understanding was he was involuntarily called to active duty. I'm not sure he was.
But that's different.
To the reserves. I'm not sure, Your Honor, but I can certainly address that in a supplemental briefing. But the fact remains that he continues to serve this country, and so the notion, the government focuses on the cost-effective nature, but the reality here is that the government is getting the same service from Lieutenant Colonel Engel, except Lieutenant Colonel Engel has less protections because he was involuntarily discharged. So we agree that the government, it certainly looks like the government did this for a cost-saving mechanism. Our position is that the Secretary of the Air Force did not have that authority, it was not granted by Congress, and it was contrary to the regulation issued by the Secretary of Defense. And we submit that the decision below should therefore be reversed for the reasons in our informal briefing, in our supplemental briefing, as well as the reasons Lieutenant Colonel Ingalls put forth. If there are no further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. The case is taken under submission. That concludes this afternoon's argument.
All rise.